Carlo Alberto Bruner, On the Bottom of the Ghetto, War Stories.
Thus, also Italy joined in the Great War. And the nationalists, particularly the young ones, almost all of them, already dreamed of the glory that was awaiting them around the corner. Naturally, the family got caught up in the whirlwind that would bring about their downfall, from which, together with their city and their society, they would never recover. In that summer of 1915, it seemed as if things would have to move fast, after Italy had occupied the lower Isonzo and arrived in Monfalcone. Trieste and Gorizia appeared to be within reach. Yet this was not the case. The first foothills of the Karst were unpassable. The monarchy's resistance prevailed time and again. In the course of each futile battle, 3,000 or 4,000 of the best young Italian men and 2,000 or 3,000 Austrians and Hungarians lost their lives. Hence, those who had a choice decided to travel to a safe region. My grandmother with her daughters and children, the private tutor and the cook, his wife, who were all Italian citizens, and therefore scheduled for expulsion, they all moved to Santa Margherita Ligure as refugees de luxe. All waited for the war to end soon, as had been trumpeted by propaganda. My grandfather, on the other hand, equipped with a good supply of quinine, as well as Toscano and Virginia cigars, which supposedly have remarkable effects against mosquitoes, moved to his drained estate at the Isonzo River Delta. However, it became increasingly difficult to continue work on the estate. Each day, less and less men were available, since they were sent in large numbers to their death at the front line. Here, he was taken by surprise with the news, we will never know how it reached him, that his son had left the front and crossed the border and had already joined the Italian army. He had even managed to take along the horse that was to accompany him in battle. In the meantime, the old man had turned gloomy, and he increasingly immersed himself into work. He had lost contact with everybody. Life proceeded at a reduced pace, always in fear of the worst to come. But one fine day, things changed all of a sudden. A regiment of Bersaglieri was sent from the slaughterhouses of the Karst for a period of rest. And here, a bored young officer from the Romagna region had the unfortunate idea to hunt pheasants outside the season, which, by the way, had been imported with the utmost efforts from the Russian Caucasus. As befits a proper Austrian knight, grandfather detested poaching and poachers, who in his eyes were no different from thieves. A confrontation ensued that evolved into a proper brawl. The case was serious. Therefore, the military court and the special police had to intervene. The verdict was handed down quickly. Found guilty to be an enemy partisan who had attacked an Italian officer on duty. He was sentenced to deportation to Sardinia. Thus, grandfather was put up on a train in a third-class compartment accompanied by two armed carabinieri, at first to Rome. From here he was supposed to get transferred to his place of exile. He was able to fill a valise with some neckties and two sets of underwear for change, his nightgown with cap, toiletries, and two English razors, which were promptly confiscated, and a supply of Virginia cigars from the Emperor's Austrian Tobacco Company. The Virginia would prove to be of utter significance. One of the carabinieri came from the province of Treviso and hence spoke almost like my grandfather. This fact and the tediousness of the long journey combined with the inconvenience of the wooden benches contributed to the reduction of distance between the two men, who started to converse with each other, and of course to smoke the exquisite cigars and to appreciate each other. After getting off the train and while proceeding to the railroad police command, to evade instructions, my grandfather had the bright idea to ask the private first class to let him talk on the phone of the station head with his brother-in-law, the one he would normally call this idiot of a brother-in-law. This time, however, he had to talk to him in his important role of High Commissioner of Refugees. Thus, he eventually found himself in Rome, as enemy citizen with little change in his pocket and nothing but the clothes he was wearing. He was allowed to go anywhere he wanted, yet one thing was prohibited to him. By no means was he to cross the Apennines, northwards, without any reason. He began by having his brother-in-law reserve him a room at the Regina Hotel on Via Veneto. Then he had himself made some clothes and a pair of shoes, purchased some bed linen and various accessories, and reclaimed his confiscated razors. Then he pressurized an old friend from the English branch of an old and wealthy Greek Triestine family who had been ennobled by the emperor and then also by Queen Victoria. Eventually, he managed to obtain a loan of 1 million Italian lire. Since, after all, his own trade was agriculture, he decided that he must acquire a country estate, complete with a villa where the family would be able to reside. Hence he set out for Tuscany. He believed that with the son on the front with the Italian army, he would hardly ever be able to return to the monarchy. And since families from Trieste and Livorno traditionally had good contacts in Tuscany, so Tuscany it was. Trieste probably served as a model, after all, to this day. Livorno is a city where there are people with such decidedly Italian and Tuscan names such as Brettauer, Meyer, Costis, Nachon, Benzimra, Bedarida, and so on. The search for a place began in Livorno and then continued in the direction of Pisa. Finally, he found the desired country estate in Valdera, Forcoli. In the meantime, he had his family move from Santa Margherita to Rome, where they waited for the restoration of the house. Life could now resume.